Hello, everyone. Have you noticed when you're faced with a choice that the important thing about a choice is that all choices have consequences? They might be good, but they might not be. If you can remember back to our first study in the life of Moses, we discussed Moses' first big choice. It is recorded for us in Hebrews chapter 11, verses 25 and 26. He chose to share the oppression of God's people instead of enjoying the fleeting pressures of sin. What was the choice? It was to identify with the people of Egypt or identify with the people of Israel. Egypt meant power, pleasure, wealth. Israel turned out to be persecution and disgrace. But Moses chose to identify with God's people, and that, in the eyes of the Egyptians, must have seemed very foolish indeed. We too live in a world opposed to God. Sometimes we face formidable odds, and like Moses, we must make choices. Let's look now at Exodus chapter 3, verses 1 to 10, and see what it says about Moses' second big choice. It is an amazing encounter with God. It is the well-known and well-loved account of Moses' conversation with God when he came across a bush burning in the desert. But the strange thing was, the bush didn't burn up. In chapter 3, verses 1 to 4, we read this. One day, Moses was tending the flock of his father-in-law Jethro. He led the flock far into the wilderness and came to Sinai. There, the angel of the Lord appeared to him in a blazing fire from the middle of a bush. Moses stared in amazement. Though the bush was engulfed in flames, it didn't burn up. "This is amazing," Moses said to himself. "Why isn't that bush burning up? I must go and see it." When the Lord saw Moses coming to take a closer look, God called him from the middle of the bush. "Moses, Moses." Moses was called by name. How do you hear God speak with you? Is it a gentle whisper in your heart? A nudge that makes you take notice? Is it through his word where he says something that really hits you? Through the words of a song or a poem, or maybe other ways. Sometimes through his people. God speaks in many ways. We should always be listening for his voice. And reading on into verse 6, "Here I am," Moses replied. "Do not come any closer," the Lord warned. "Take off your sandals, for you are standing on holy ground. I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob." When Moses heard this, he covered his face because he was afraid to look at God. God reminded Moses he was in God's holy presence. "Take off your sandals," he said, a sign of humility and reverence. And how did Moses react? Verse 6 says, when Moses heard this, he covered his face because he was afraid to look at God. What do you think his feelings were? Awe? Fear? Astonishment? Wonder? What God would speak directly to his people like this? Now I have a question for you. How do we behave in God's presence? How should we show respect to God in our day? Reading on. Then the Lord told him, I have certainly seen the oppression of my people in Egypt. I have heard their cries of distress because of their harsh slave drivers. Yes, I am aware of their suffering. So I have come down to rescue them from the power of the Egyptians and to lead them out of Egypt into their own fertile and spacious land. It is a land flowing with milk and honey. Look, the cry of the people of Israel has reached me, and I have seen how harshly the Egyptians have treated them. Here God explained his side. He introduced his dialogue with Moses very clearly. What did he say? I have seen, I have heard, I am aware, and I have come to rescue. I'm thinking that God was trying to reassure Moses that he was interested in the plight of the people. Now, Moses, I have seen, I have heard, I am aware, I have come to rescue. Would that make you feel better in the presence of an awesome God who couldn't be seen, but who could talk to you? He knows what's going on. He understands your situation. And God goes on in verse 10. Now go, for I am sending you to Pharaoh. You must lead my people out of Egypt. God's instruction was clear. Now go, Moses, get on with it. God asked Moses to lead his people out of slavery to the promised land. I don't think that's a very simple assignment. But look at the promise God gave about the fertile and spacious land. He wasn't planning only to rescue the people, but to provide bountifully for them in the fulfillment of his long ago promises. I read recently that the Israelites are very good beekeepers. How good is that? God provided honey way back then, and it seems like he still provides the bees. And now we come to Moses' response to God, along with God's countering arguments and his provision to overcome them. Notice how these verses are structured. Moses objects, God answers with his provision. In verse 11, but Moses protested to God, who am I to appear before Pharaoh? Who am I to lead the people out of Israel to Egypt? So Moses showed his inadequacy for such a task, and he let his fear of it rule him. Does that sound familiar to you? God answered, I will be with you, and this is your sign that I am the one who has sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you will worship God at this very mountain. And God kept his promise. They had wandered through the wilderness, and as we read in Exodus 20, they came to the same site of the burning bush, and this time God gave Moses the Ten Commandments. What memories must have surged there at that time for Moses? And now have a look at chapter 3, verses 13 to 15. But Moses protested, if I go to the people of Israel and tell them, the God of your ancestors has sent me to you, they will ask me, what is his name? Then what I should tell them? So here's Moses again, putting up all sorts of objections. But God's telling response is in verse 14. God replied, I am who I am. Say this to the people of Israel, I am has sent me to you. God also said to Moses, I am Yahweh, the God of your ancestors. I have sent you. I am the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. This is my eternal name, my name to remember for all generations. Note especially verse 14. God said, I am who I am. That phrase is sometimes translated, I will be what I will be. So God is saying that his character will be revealed as events unfold. I have never been certain myself of what that phrase actually means. So I checked out a few places. What do you think of this? I am is the ultimate statement of self-sufficiency, self-existence, and immediate presence. God's existence is not contingent upon anyone else. His plans are not consistent upon any circumstances. He promises that he will be what he will be. That is, he will be the eternally constant God. He stands ever present and unchangeable, completely sufficient in himself to do what he wills to do and accomplish what he plans to accomplish. When God identified himself as I am who I am, he stated that no matter when or where, he is there. What a great assurance. So reading further in chapter 3, verses 16 to 22, now go and call together all the elders of Israel. Tell them, Yahweh has appeared to me. He told me, I have been watching closely and I see how the Egyptians are treating you. I have promised to rescue you from your oppression in Egypt. I will lead you to the promised land. But I know that the king of Egypt will not let you go unless a mighty hand forces him. So I will raise my hand and strike the Egyptians, performing all kinds of miracles among them. Then at last he will let you go. And I will cause the Egyptians to look favorably upon you. They will give you gifts when you go. You will not leave empty-handed. Every Israelite woman will ask for articles of silver and gold and fine linen from her Egyptian neighbors and from the foreign women who live in their houses. You will dress your sons and daughters with these, stripping the Egyptians of their wealth. And God comes back with so many more assurances. Listen to these. I have promised to rescue you. I will lead you to a land flowing with milk and honey. I will raise my hand and perform miracles. The king at last will let you go, and the Egyptians will give you gifts. And in chapter 4, verses 1 to 9, Moses protested again. But what if they won't believe me or listen to me? What if they say, the Lord never appeared to you? And God gave two miraculous signs for Moses to use. You can read about them for yourselves. Yet again, Moses says, they won't believe me. And it just continues on and on. Oh, dear. In chapter 4, verses 10 to 12, Moses pleaded with the Lord, oh, Lord, I'm not very good with words. I never have been, and I'm not now, even though you have spoken to me. I get tongue-tied. My words get tangled. Then the Lord asked Moses, who makes a person's mouth? Who decides whether people speak or do not speak? Hear or do not hear? See or do not see? Is it not I, the Lord? Now go. I will be with you as you speak, and I will instruct you what to say. And there's Moses again. I'm not good with words, God. It's his catch complaint from here on so many more times. In chapter 6, we read, Moses said to the Lord, if the Israelites would not listen to me, why would Pharaoh listen to me, since I speak with such faltering lips? And you know, he said it again in chapter 6, verse 30. Did you detect God's frustration in verse 11? Listen here, Moses. Who made your mouth? Who decides whether people speak or not, hear or not? It's me, Yahweh. I just told you I am who I am. So Moses gave up on that argument. No more excuses about being no good with words. But he does find a solution to his problem. Oh dear, on this one. Moses again pleaded, Lord, please send anyone else. Send anybody else. Just not me. Read verses 14 to 17 and find that God provided Aaron to be the mouthpiece for Moses. Moses was to instruct Aaron what to say. And look at verse 14. God became angry with Moses. His dilly-dallying was no good for God. But note that God's anger did not last very long. Almost immediately, he provides a way out. His compassion ruled his anger. But God wasn't giving up on his plan. Moses complained in so many ways that he wasn't suitable. Have you ever looked at those excuses carefully? Have you answered God like Moses did? Can you think of an example from your own life? That day at the burning bush must have been a red letter day for Moses. Surely he must have had great conviction at that time of his calling and purpose. What a conversation. I think the bush was still burning, and I can pretty well guarantee that Moses' heart was burning as well. Some things in this miraculous event really stand out for me. God said, I have heard, I have seen, I am aware, I have come to rescue. God heard their prayers. He hears our prayers too. I am who I am. God identified himself in this way. He stated that no matter when or where, he is there powerfully. And then God reminded Moses of his promises. I'm the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Yes, he was the God of the patriarchs. And this God is our God still today. You know, Pharaoh had no legs to stand on. Always remember who we are talking to when God communicates with us, when he sends us on a mission for him. He is for us, and that means he is against everything else. God continued to show his persistence and his power. He never gave up on Moses. When things got desperate, God came to the rescue. And then he said, I will take you to the land I have chosen. What promises or goals can you rely on when you have heard from God? Have you ever responded, I will, because you have promised? So Moses went back to his father-in-law, requested permission to return to Egypt, and it was there in Egypt, the foreign country, that Moses saw God do exactly what he said he would. The 10 plagues that God sent eventually convicted Pharaoh to let the Israelites go. I love this report in chapter 10, verses 28 and 29. "Get out of here," Pharaoh shouted at Moses. "I'm warning you, never come back to see me again. The day you see my face, you will die." "Very well," Moses replied, "I will never see your face again." Can you imagine Moses striding out of Pharaoh's palace? I can even hear him thinking, "You betcha, Pharaoh, I won't be back here anytime soon." Moses had learned to trust God. Moses had seen God in action, and he wasn't afraid anymore. God will provide the means for you to do what he says. Does Moses' experience of God convince you of that? Recently, Murray shared a prayer on his daily devotions. I would like us to hear that prayer now. Maybe it's for you at this moment. Or maybe it will resonate with you for some future time. Think carefully about it as we pray together. It's titled, "The Prayer of a Reluctant Servant." Dear God, I've got to make a decision soon. I can't even believe that I'm considering doing this. It is a big commitment, a huge change for me. And I'm not even sure it fits me. Who am I that I should take this step? Of all people, why did you choose me? I really don't know if I can handle this. Well, God, let's imagine I say yes. Where should I begin? I can't just waltz in there and assume command as if everybody already trusts me. What should I tell them? They might not accept me. Maybe they won't like me. And I can't do this without their support. What if they don't believe me? What if they think I'm not qualified? Or even worse, they don't want me to help. I can't take being rejected, God. You know how fragile my ego is. I can't picture myself doing this. I've never been eloquent. It's just not my nature. Why can't I just stick to what I've been doing and not embarrass you or anybody else? The more I think about this, the colder my feet get. I can't do it, God. It scares me. I certainly don't need any more fear in my life. I don't have what it takes for this one. God, let me out of it, please. Send someone else to do it. Surely you have an alternative who will do a better job than I could ever do. Oh, you're still asking me to do it. I can't shake the sense that you are serious. You really want me, don't you? Lord, you really want me. Forgive my arguments, God. You really have a much higher view of me than I do. Thanks for your confidence. Well, I guess we know who is going to get it done. I'm going to really need you, God. Yes, I'm definitely going to need you. Amen. So what is God calling you to do? Tell him you are struggling. Let him calm your fears. Ask him to make it very clear. And then pray for a willing spirit to do what he says. And I know that, like so many others, you will find that answering his call is the very best choice for you. May God bless us all as we walk together in the will of God with his power in and around us.
Promise is that when we draw near to him, he draws near to us. So why don't we open our hearts for him to do a new work in us in this place as we worship together.
Of heaven.